again, everyone. It is No Filter Sports. Eli Zarrett, Denny McLean, Bob Page. It is October 17th. That's what it is.
All day.
It is a Thursday. And we've got a lot coming up today. Talk about the abomination, otherwise known as NFL officiating, that certainly affected the Lions profoundly.
Oh,
not just
please.
The game, but their season. Yes, profoundly.
Profoundly.
We're going to talk about the playoffs. Michigan's got a huge game coming up that could determine their season, very likely end it, should they get blown out in Penn State or even lose by a point. Also want to talk, we're going to preview our guest coming up, Rupert Jones, at the end of the hour. One of the less obscure, but not one of the main names on the 84 Tigers. And also do much.
What does
more.
That mean, less obscure? Are we talking Marty Castillo now?
Yes.
And some other guys that
yes.
some folks won't remember?
Rusty Kuntz, although they remember Rusty Kuntz a little bit, but
yeah, you know what I remember about Rusty? First of all, the big hit he got down the stretch. But we had a bet back then how long it was going to take George Kell to butcher that name and say, you know what? And every time Rusty's in there, we're waiting. And finally it happened.
No.
Well, here's Rusty Kuntz.
No, I don't remember that.
Yeah,
no.
He did say
maybe
that.
Once in the beginning. Maybe. But there are many obscure. I mean, Randy O'Neill pitched the game that clinched the pennant, but big deal. You know, he was gone. Sid Mangi, Roger Mason played, though he went on after that. I mean, Dwight Lowry, Doug Baker, so many of them. Rupert Jones.
Dwight Lowry's dead.
Yes.
And so was Jeff Robinson, the pitcher off that team.
But Jeff Robinson didn't pitch on that team. He pitched on the 89
team. Oh, I thought he was on the 84
team. No, he was not on the 84 team.
Oh, okay.
Scotty Earle was an obscure infielder. So a lot, and Rod Allen, who I just talked to for half an hour on the phone yesterday. I'd like to get Rod Allen on this show at some point, and I've been discussing.
Wait. Did you say you talked to Rod again yesterday? You just talked to him about a week ago.
Well,
or two.
But he wanted to talk to me again, and he wanted me to consider a few things and consult me about.
You want to get him on? I'll get him on.
Well, stop it. You'll get him on. I mean, he's. I said, we're not going to get you on until you're ready to describe what happened with Mario Mpemba and give a detailed explanation.
Why do you want to let him direct that? Why don't we just call him and have him on and let him go where it goes?
Because he won't.
He won't come on. But I will say this.
A big
thank you to Dennis Dale McLean, because he's been getting some great guests on this show for us, Denny. You are the man.
Tiger Woods is the man.
And the Pete Rose show that we did, the interview that we did, was picked up by the Cincinnati Inquirer and then by the parent company, Gannett Newspapers. Article in USA Today about us, mentioning us in the show and quoting Pete Rose. That was great stuff, man.
Well, actually, the guy who deserves credit for that is Mark Faulkner, who the assistant.
Detroit News.
Yeah, you see how he takes the credit away from me right away?
No.
He bumps me off the bench.
You are so insecure and so paranoid. No. What I was saying was the publicity, not the interview.
I know you get credit for that.
And so Faulkner allowed us to write a little synopsis of the interview,
right.
A small article in the News, which is a Gannett paper,
right.
Was picked up by the Cincinnati paper. Of course, Rose is from Cincinnati. Right. He then listened to the show and gave much more detailed quotes with Rose, and then that was picked up by USA Today. So that was very nice.
And I talked to Pete about it, and Pete says just one thing. He says he hasn't had so many phone calls
really?
Since he started playing second base.
No kidding.
And, folks, again, I hope the listeners don't mind if once in a while we toot our own collective horns. We went on the air only 9 months ago in January. I think our first show where we have 1,500 downloads. If it weren't for that article that you didn't like by Neil Rubin in the Detroit News saying we were going to do this show, we would have had 10 downloads. And look at us now.
You're wrong. It was the second article he did on the Drew and Mike show that included us.
Yeah, that helped too.
Boosted us a little bit. But we've been able to get some guests that not just that don't appear a lot, like Dick Vitale you hear from time to time and hear John Sally, but we can spend more time with them and kind of get deeper, and it's kind of more like guy-to-guy stuff.
We get to spend more time with them, and we can bring out their entertainment value too. I mean, they've all got some entertainment value in some area. Look at Vitale. He can do 5 hours with you, and we don't even have to ask him a question.
Now, I asked Brandon a little while ago whether he knew who Mike Lucci was, because we've got a Mike Lucci on Monday, and he said no, and that's okay. Well, Mike Lucci was just named to the all-time Lions team this season at linebacker, along with Joe Schmidt and Chris Spielman. Mike Lucci was an amazing player, and he's turning 80 this year. He is sharp as a tack. I talked to him for a long time about officiating and all that. By the way, here's a little preview, okay, because Lucci, I did a story of him a couple of years ago, was on the field when Tom Dempsey hit the longest field goal of all time. And by the way,
At that time,
the record at that time was only 56 yards.
Yeah.
And when I listened to some old Lions season summaries to try and, you know, find some Lucci sound, which is very hard to find, Van Patrick mentioned a 46-yard field goal as an amazing kick. This is back in the 60s. Because back then, anything over 40 yards, you just didn't expect to make it. Anyway, so...
Unless your name was Lou Groza.
True. Now, so Lucci was on the field. Here's the question and the result, or his answer to the result, when I asked him about what the thought was as Dempsey lined up from 63 yards.
So they make the first down, and of course it's 63 yards, and they said, nobody jump off sides. This guy can't kick that far.
Here's a snap. The ball is down. Dempsey kicks. It's on the way. It is.
And so, yes, they lost 19-17 in that game. And by the way, had they won that game, see, the Lions finished 10-4 in 1970. That was the last great team to make the playoffs before the 91 team with Wayne Fonts, who we also had on.
Right.
They lost in Dallas 5-0, a terrible, terrible game.
Well, that's not a great team then, is it, if they lost in Dallas? It was a horrendous game. And people forget about that Tom Dempsey field goal. I watched in horror from my little apartment in Madison Heights, Michigan. But the play before that, Billy Kilmer completed an out pattern that set that field goal up because the Lions were in the prevent defense.
Right.
And you know what Detroit native Jerry Glanville used to say about that. Prevent defense, I'll tell you what it does. It prevents you from winning.
Yeah, because they got the ball with less than a minute to go and no timeouts left, and they somehow got into – field goal range.
But, hey, but I want to mention one other thing since you brought Brandon into the conversation. You know, I just get the feeling so many people his age, the younger generations, they don't know about this stuff. They're just not interested. Now, when I was a boy, my dad took me, hell, I was 11, 12 years old, into this little bar where he'd hang out on Mack Avenue in Grosse Pointe to meet the great Hunchy Hornschmeyer.
Ooh.
So the time I was 11, I knew Bob Hornschmeyer was of the great Detroit Lion championship teams. I read about the 27 Yankees. Yeah. I could have named all the guys on the 57 championship team. The younger people just don't seem interested.
So what's your point? Is that what the point is, that they don't seem interested?
That's what the point is, pal.
Well, I think it's real easy, pal. Pal, it's this. They have many more things to do. They get into the computers earlier. They get into their handheld, their laptops. I mean, they've got a million other things.
And you're forgetting something else, too, along those lines.
And the last thing they do is they play these games all the time.
Okay, but the other point is that there's twice as many leagues. There's it was the AFL that came later.
Yeah, you're right.
And you got many more teams, many more divisions, many more things to follow. And so when I was that age, when I was 10 years old, the NFL hadn't even exploded. The famous game where the Giants beat the Colts in overtime, or the Colts beat the Giants in overtime. The NFL was nothing. It was a flea bag league. The NBA was a flea bag league until Magic and Bird came along. So and also you had to read back then because there wasn't any TV.
Right.
There's no highlights of Mike Lucci. There was nothing was saved.
And we all read the paper every day from the first page to the last page.
The sporting news.
And you read the sporting news
so you could see who was playing, what ex-big leaguers were doing what in the Pacific Coast League or whatever, every box score. And the thing about it is, I've mentioned this before, the three of us are so fortunate to have grown up in what is now referred to as the golden era of baseball. We played snow growing up in Detroit. We played baseball in the snow, used a red rubber ball so you could see where it was hit. And it was, we ate baseball, we slept it, and we breathed it. And now with all the video things, and I think, and I tweeted this out this week, that this is one cause for this ridiculous amount of obesity we're seeing in America. Kids don't get out anymore. They're not as active as we were. Yeah. They're sitting inside on their butts and they're playing video games and doing whatever else they're doing.
And they also get weeded out in sports because the travel teams are all the good players.
Yeah, that's right.
And most kids that don't show a lot of skill early on.
Travel teams cost money to play in.
I mean, anyway,
there's a lot of kids that don't get an opportunity.
Good. Let's move on. I want to start with this national firestorm, deservedly so, crazily so, over this Lions game. And it's the Lions game is just another example of how the officiating has run amok. And the officiating is awful. It's awful in every game, and replay only makes it worse.
Here he goes, Bob. He's ripping your referees
and
again.
The officials.
Not my referees. No, he's an umpire. We've been talking about this on the show for a while.
It's the umpires,
officiating has been embarrassing.
It's embarrassing, and their referees are also fighting back. In other words, there's been in the last few weeks, there's been 21 pass interference calls reviewed, only one overturned. They're angry about it because the coaches insisted that that be put in. And so what happened in the Lions game is reprehensible, the two calls on Trey Flowers. So, and I'll give Booger McFarland some credit. I don't think he's a great analyst. He's okay. He gets the game. I think he talks too much. They all talk too much. I don't want to get into that. But in any case.
The three of us talk too much, gammit.
Anyway, the officiating is awful, and credit to Booger, who as a defensive lineman, former defensive lineman and an all-pro and a two-time Super Bowl champion, saw what was happening, thought it was outrageous, and after he pointed out on the first penalty that cost the Lions a sack and then a first down, they got the first down on that, a gift first down, and the Packers got a touchdown and made it 22-20. Then it happened again with less than 2 minutes, another illegal hands to the face, and gave them a chance, the Packers, to bleed the Lions timeouts and time. Here's what Booger said the second time. Credit to him.
But again, that is a terrible call. That's twice on Trey Flowers in crucial situations that the refs have blown the call. Let's make sure we let America know that that's twice. The first time it cost them a sack. This time, it cost him the game.
Saying that, America, I want you to know, we see it and we know it. So I want
you to know, easy.
Jump
easy.
In there, because I got so much more to say.
Enough. Listen, both teams are playing with the same referees. You're not
doesn't
saying
make it right.
That. But are you saying that the referees are favoring the Green Bay Packers?
Not at all.
Okay. Well, then back off a little bit. If you think he made a mistake, and then move on. Listen, the Packers practice the penalties. They practice the counts. They do all of this. They're great actors when they're going after a football. I think it's a part of their program. They really do practice this stuff.
They mean acting for penalties.
Absolutely. They fall down harder. They do the shtick. And, boy, I'll tell you, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But the Packers have been awarded 501 yards from opposing penalties in the first 6 weeks of the season. The Lions right now are 32 out of 32 in penalty beneficiary yards at just 234 yards. So, you know what? It's got a lot to do with the team, too. And we got more rookies playing right now than we almost have veterans.
Denny's making a great point. I don't know if you saw that article this week, but David Bakhtiari, who was involved in those phantom, you know, hands to the face thing, says, yeah, we do practice that. We're aware of that. And folks, if you think there are either A, way too many penalties being called in the NFL, or B, not enough, where do you think that comes from? It's not incompetent officiating. It comes from the league office when they sit down with the officials and say, here's what we want you to watch for. We need you to call this more, or we don't want you to call this as much.
It's the same thing in baseball. They dictate how high the strike is supposed to be, how low the strike is going to be.
So there's two ways
to go. Well, not so much anymore because they've got the K-zone. They have the computer zone.
Well, the K-zone's making a big difference. You're right.
There's three things you can do. You can ignore it and let it go on the way it is, or you can try and change the replay system and the way it's implemented, or you can do what Mark Schlereth said, which I disagree with, ridiculous. Right. He was on Fox the other day with that show it does with Jason Whitlock, basically said, let's just get rid of the whole replay system and just trust the refs to call it, which I think is really stupid, because then you go back to where you were in 1975, where we see the replay, we know what happened, but the refs don't, and they look even stupider when they make wrong penalties like they do today. So then you'd have it where we all still see it on TV, but at the ballpark, they're blind to it. So that's stupid, too. But guys, don't you think, just like we talk about baseball in the strike zone, someday they're probably going to let it happen through technology, through computers.
It's coming.
So why not? In fact, these were just the two most visible penalties. There was one on Marvin Jones, a pass interference on the same drive, I believe, when it was the end of the third quarter. I don't know. Ridiculous. He was interfered with, cost the Lions a drive. And so,
you know what, though? You guys blame the referees and this and this. You know, let's not forget there was a rookie end that dropped the ball. dropped, and they all wound up only with a field goal.
Hawkinson dropped it in the end zone.
I mean, that makes all the difference. And they win the ball game if he catches
The Green Bay guy dropped it in the end zone, too, when it hit him in the face mask. So what I'm saying...
The hell with the Green Bay guy. They won anyway, but Hawkinson cost him the ball game.
Hackensack's a city in New Jersey.
No, I got a nickname. I almost gave him the nickname that I had for him Sunday.
Yeah, well, now, Hackensack's a place in New Jersey, and it is Mark Schlereth is his name.
Right.
But fellas, you know what this comes down to, and everybody who listens knows what this comes down to. You know what? The Lions could have won that game Monday night.
That's not what it comes down to.
They probably should have won that game
Monday.
That
doesn't solve
it.
Stop it.
And they would have won that game Monday night if only. Now, you fill in the blank because it's the same damn thing every time. And they would have won that game.
Stop. Don't get into that. It's institutional losing, and it's like meant to be. You of all people, with divine intervention, don't make it sound that what happened in 1985 has got anything to do with what happens today. I know what you feel about the Ford.
Oh, but it does.
Let me finish my point.
It's still the NFL's owned by the Fords.
Oh, stop.
And then I want it right after you.
All right. So, the pass interference call to Marvin Jones that was missed. It takes 40 seconds. After they get back to the line of scrimmage to start the next play, you're telling me that with all these cameras, every play can't be reviewed by guys in New York, you get a crew of them, and they see right away that's pass interference, and they make the determination, and they call it. And then the flag comes. They could have looked at Trey Flowers because that replay was there. Somebody could have looked at it before the next play.
So
potentially, I think the referee, just like you say, I mean, you're for computer balls and strikes.
Yes,
you can do computer penalties in the NFL. It'd be expensive, and it'd be a big change. Aren't these all part-time referees?
Yeah,
aren't
sure.
So they're not
don't
even
give
full-time.
Me that stuff again. They get the best referees, the best officials, because they are part-time. The best guys are not umpiring in Major League Baseball, perhaps, and the other sports.
Not anymore.
Because they don't pay them well. They're constantly away from their families. It's a very tough life.
These umpires make real money. They make real money. I'm talking about baseball now. They make real money.
You're talking about $300,000 max for the veteran umpires. What's that
real anywhere from mean 125? Anywhere from 125 to 300,000 a year. That's pretty good money.
Well, all their expenses on the road.
By the way, nobody put a gun to their head and told them they had to go be an umpire. They could go drive a truck. They could go drive a cab.
I understand.
They could do the music cab. What's the name of that cab that goes around New York all the time?
Cash cab.
You guys remember Jerry Markbright?
Yeah.
Who's the best official by far referee.
Well, that's what you say.
Of course. May I finish, please?
We
you guys
vote
are stepping
again.
All over me.
Somebody suggested that be the name of the show, by the way. May I finish, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, Markbright then became one of the legendary referees in the history of the NFL. Well, Jerry wrote a book 15 years ago about his life as an official. It was fascinating. You find that book online. If you want to know what these guys go through, the training, the meetings constantly, and yet they can still go home to their families at night. So it's a good thing. I mean, a lot of guys would not want to officiate games at the NFL if they were just on the road all the time.
Let's assume they're as good as they can be. There's seven officials on the field, 22 players moving at the speed of light. How can seven people watch everything that 22 other people are doing and make a decision in the tenth of a second? You can't keep your eyes on everything. Anyway.
And you made a great point, Eli, a moment ago. And I've been saying this for a long time before we ever even started this show. How many times do we see a controversial call on the field? They replay it immediately, and the three of us and all of our listeners at home immediately know whether the call was good or not. Why do you have to call time? Bring the referee over to go to his little porno peep show.
Right.
Look at the video. We already know whether it was a good call or not. As you say, Eli, guy in New York.
I mean, he's already seen it.
He's got a knife. Just tell him in his IFB when he's on the field.
Exactly.
Reverse that call.
They could do that on every single play and every pass interference and get rid of all this going over and over and over it and looking at 15 different replays on TV and taking four timeouts.
And listen, I don't think I'm in the minority here when I say I miss the Earls of this world and the Yogis and the Billy Martins of kicking dirt on the umpires and running out there.
That doesn't happen in football.
But forget football. Now I'm talking about baseball for a second.
You know what they should
do? I'm talking about entertainment value overall.
Let's, before the game starts, just have guys go kick a lot of dirt.
Good idea.
And argue with each other and then start the game. Anyway.
But the first week, I want to do Bob.
Okay. Okay. Listen.
Because, you know, I liked him personally. I really did.
Ooh.
So I can't, Lou Piniella.
Oh,
so
yeah,
I can't
guy.
Put Lou in the class with those jerks, Martin and Weaver. But seeing Lou Piniella out there kicking jersey, picking bases up out of their stanchions, throwing it halfway across the infield, I don't want to see that anymore.
One Lou Piniella story, real quick.
Oh, jeez.
I played golf one day with Piniella.
Oh, jeez.
You do not want to play golf with Piniella. Because when he hits the bad shot, do not be in front of him because you will hear a helicopter coming over your head. Here it comes. Over here comes a driver. Here comes a wedge.
Don't tell me about self-loathing in golf. I'm the master at that.
You're
anyway,
the master.
I'm also the master at talking about corrective eye surgery because I got it
twice.
I got LASIK surgery from Dr. Yaldo in 2000, gave me 2015 vision, threw away those ugly glasses, and I got multifocal lens exchange at age 67 or 8 because I had cataracts, and now I got perfect vision up close. I got perfect far vision because the multifocal lenses are amazing. And you can get it when you're 45 or so, could get rid of your reading glasses for good. So he is number one in Michigan. He's done 30,000 LASIK procedures. He's done over 20,000 or so of these lens exchanges. And if you want to get rid of glasses, contacts, reading glasses, all that ancient technology that takes away from your lifestyle every day, just get a free evaluation. It's easy. Call 1-800-398-EYES. That's 800-398-EYES. Go to YaldoEyeCenter.com. He will match, or beat, I should say, beat any offer if you've gone to another LASIK provider and show it to him. Denny,
another great sponsor of
ours.
Hall Financial has received nearly 800 five-star reviews from their happy clients, and they're on a mission to hit 1,000 this year, 2019. David's team of mortgage pros gives every client VIP service, ensuring that they don't only have a name, but they do not have a number.
Oh, okay.
We kicked that off, didn't we? What if I told you that Hall Financial, don't you dare criticize me. Told you that Hall Financial will not only walk you through the process of buying your home, but provide you with the top realtor in your area? Who doesn't want that type of service?
We'll give
Hall Financial knows how to deliver five-star service. That means your schedule, availability at night and on weekends, and wherever Eli wants to meet you. They're going to work for you, and he will, and you won't be charged hidden or extra fees. You know what you're getting when you work with Hall Financial. Call them today at 248-308-5000 if you're looking to purchase or refi, or chat with them online at davidhallmortgage.com. Give Hall Financial a chance today. It's an equal housing lender, NMLS number 1467435, and that's 248-308-5000.
You are listening,
Eli,
to
I know.
Excuse me.
Before you say that, I just want to say this. You are running this show, Eli, and you know that I made a lot of money here in New York as a professional voiceover.
Oh, we don't give a damn what you mean.
It's up to you to decide who reads these commercials, damn it.
I can't take
Bob,
it away.
Bob, go back to bed, would you please? Go back to playing with your pud.
Excuse me. You've been listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. We need to say that for our radio people. Now, one thing I didn't mention before, I put the officiating thing, and that's just one example of many what happened to the Lions. Desmond Howard tweets, "The refs need to be investigated. This is horrendous. Check their bank accounts. It's a damn shame that the brilliance of Aaron Rodgers will take a backseat to two ridiculous calls by the officials." That's true. We're talking about the officiating instead of the Packers' comeback. And he, by the way, Desmond did win a MVP for the Packers in the Super Bowl. And Barry Sanders said, "It's sickening. The NFL needs to look at a way to prevent that from happening. Two phantom hands-to-the-face calls really hurt us tonight."
You know who really ripped them, too? Clay Matthews. He really ripped them pretty bad, too. So
everybody
thinks they saw he ripped them. And the Rams, after parting ways with Green Bay, Matthews put his Packers pass behind him, slamming the NFL and their referees.
Okay.
He says, "You got to get a better system."
All I know about this is, besides my usual Lions lament, the big story coming out of this game, you can talk about the officiating all you want, but fellas, Ninja has given up his Detroit Lions season tickets after epic collapse versus Packers. That was the headline this week in the Detroit papers.
Who's Ninja?
Ninja, as you well know. Well, you don't know this? He's the Fortnite star from Michigan. His real name is – that's a big thing with kids.
Yeah, I know. Don't tell me.
His real name is Tyler Blevins. He was at Green Bay to see the game. He was shown on the sideline, as a matter of fact. And after the game, Blevins posted this, literally never going to another Lions game again, canceling my tickets to the Lions. There's another guy who gets it.
Okay.
Gets it.
No, he doesn't get it because he didn't realize what the penalty was. He didn't see the replay. He was sitting in the stands. So he doesn't know what he's talking about because the Lions were ahead 22-13. Listen, I'm not here to defend the Lions, but in this case, I am. 22-13, they're ahead 10 minutes to go. They give them a gift first down, and two plays later, it's a touchdown. That was seven free points. points, which changed the entire game.
Yeah, you know, the Lions could have won that game, and they would have won that game. Jeez, enough is enough.
And now, you know what else? The St. Louis Cardinals could have won the playoffs, too.
They sucked right. so badly. I've never seen a terrible? Team choke like they did against Washington.
How did the pitching go?
One other thing about this, another Detroit News headline, ex-Michigan State Spartan star Kirk Cousins is outlasting all his critics. He's had two big games mm-hmm. in a row, and Cousins and the Minnesota Vikings are in Detroit yes. this Sunday to take on the FLs. Who do you like in that one, guys?
I like the Lions in that one.
Yeah, I do too. Oh, yeah. What's the spread? You know yet? I haven't seen it.
Oh, I don't look
I'm going to guess Lions plus three for the whole game. Probably pick them plus three. Yeah. Minnesota's reasonably high. Brandon will have it in a tenth of a second. Anyway, we can put the NFL aside for a second and penalties and talk a little bit about what's going to happen. I'm going to be in Minneapolis Saturday, by the way, but I'm hopefully on TV for a wedding. Hopefully the Michigan-Penn State game is on. And I tell you, man, this is if what happens to Michigan, even if they lose by a couple of points, as opposed to what happened against Wisconsin on the road, which was dreadful. They're done. Okay, first of all, they're done for the season with two losses in the Big Ten. So that's over as far as that goes. Okay. After that, though, they play Notre Dame at home, and I tell you, this is critical. These next 8 days, starting Saturday, of the future of Jim Harbaugh.
We talked about this, and I said on the last show, this is the newest, biggest game of Jim Harbaugh's entire coaching career at Michigan. It really is.
You're both wrong. He's not going to get fired. He's not going to get fired. I don't care what he does. Listen, if he gets blown out 72-0 by Ohio State, he's not getting fired.
Why is that?
Because they put their entire university reputation on the line when they brought him in here. He was supposed to be the savior. They're going to give him more time to be the savior. They're going to let him do what he needs to do. Sooner or later, he's going to bring in an offensive coordinator, and this ball club is going to get better. Because I think Patterson can throw the ball.
Well, he had a chance to bring in an offensive coordinator this year. And as Urban Meyer said the other day, by the way, I made a joke before the season that if Michigan fans had their choice to get Urban Meyer, would they take him? Because he's not a Michigan man. And I would think that they might. But anyway.
He's a job hopper, Eli. That's so why
what?
You don't take him.
So
he's
Nick Saban.
Would
he's
you take him?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
And he's a job hopper.
I wonder.
Oh, my health is so bad. I got to leave Florida. I'm retiring. My health's so bad.
A year later, I can be a head coach at Ohio State. It's like Al Ackerman's campaign with Dick Vitale when he is allegedly sick. He quit the University of Detroit. He gets the Pistons job. And Al Ackerman says on television constantly, plop, plop, fizz, fizz. Oh, what a relief $100,000 is, because that's what Dick was making, a huge sum at the time to go to the Pistons.
As most of us know, there's a fan station just about in every city in the United States. And Meyer was on a fan station the other day, and the interviewer asked him, would you go to Michigan if they asked you and if they gave you enough money? He screamed in the studio, no!
Of course he'd say that.
Well, of course he would. Why would it be, of course?
I think because of the because he's going to say that. He's not going to campaign for the job
he's
right now.
He's not going to Michigan. They're not going to hire him.
I don't think they will either, because that's the cult of Michigan, where it has to be a Michigan man for some ridiculous
that's
reason,
ridiculous,
even though
isn't it
isn't anywhere else.
Right.
It has to be a Michigan man here. But I think they should go for the best coach, which is what they only do at every other school in America.
Be fair, Lloyd Carr didn't go to Michigan. Rich Rodriguez didn't go to Michigan.
No, Rich Rodriguez was an aberration.
But how about Lloyd Carr? Bo didn't go to Michigan.
But time out. Lloyd Carr coached for Michigan for 15 years before he became head coach.
He's not a Michigan man.
Neither was Bo Schembechler, who said it all. But if you're here, then you're a Michigan guy. So Lloyd Carr was a Michigan man, but Gary Moeller was a Michigan man. And
Gary Moeller went to Ohio State, for Christ's sake.
I'm agreeing with you in the one hand that it doesn't have to be a Michigan man. It's a dumb proposition that Bo Schembechler forced upon the Michigan base. when he said only a Michigan man will coach Michigan when Bill Frieder left for Arizona State. Anyway, and the guy who replaced him, Steve Fisher, actually did a pretty good
job. Michigan State, again, as we mentioned the last show, has two byes in the next 3 weeks. Very weird. Sandwiched between a loss to Penn State.
Yeah, that makes no sense. No sense at all. And the only way he gets out of here, Harbaugh, is if he gets another NFL job, and I don't think that's going to happen either.
Well, we'll have to wait to the end of the season to see that, but I think it's very possible that if he loses to Penn State, by the way, he's only an 8.5-point underdog, but that white out at Penn State is pretty tough to play. And Urban Meyer even said that him again.
But don't you think this is interesting? Because Michigan's entire season and Harbaugh's entire career, though Denny disagrees, could hinge on one game Saturday night. Michigan could go on, beat Penn State, have a great season, no heat anymore whatsoever, or they could lose, maybe get beat by Notre Dame and clobbered by Ohio State and Harbaugh. I don't care what you say, Danny. You're going to be in big trouble.
He could lose three in a row, no question about it. But you know what? They're not going to fire him. I'm telling you, they're not going to fire him.
I'm sure you got inside information on that. But anyway, if he loses to Penn State, Notre Dame, and Ohio State, I think there'd be a ground swell to get him out of here.
I agree.
Spartans are off. Okay. Ohio State gets a breather at Northwestern, Wisconsin and Illinois. So those are two gimmies. And she said the Lions are home to Minnesota.
And the Penn State game is a Saturday night game, right?
Yeah.
And you don't think the tail's wagging the proverbial dog and the big 13-plus Rutgers and national televised games elsewhere around the country. That Ohio State-Northwestern game is Friday night.
Why?
What are you playing Friday night for? TV money.
Of course.
That's why they're playing Friday night.
TV money is behind all of it. We're going to talk to Rupert Jones later on in the hour, and I wanted to give a little background on that if I can. You know, we talked about a little earlier, but Bob, you were right. You mentioned the other day that Rupert played a key role in 84. And shame on me, because I wrote the book about it. I went back and read my book on the 84 Tigers that I wrote in 2004. And fact is, though Tiger fans forget because the whole season was so glorious, in early June, they called up Rupert on June 5th. They were playing the Blue Jays. He replaced Rod Allen, who we mentioned earlier also, because Rod was the right-handed bat, Rupert was the left-handed bat, and the Tigers, Rupert had been out of baseball. The Tigers signed him to a minor league contract for Evansville. He played down at Evansville, did very, very well. They brought him up June 5th. They lost two straight to the Blue Jays, and they only led by 3.5 games in early June. They had started 35-5. They lost 8 of their next 12, and it was Jones who on June 7th came in and hit a 3-run homer that just injected him into the situation, and here out of the blue, he's suddenly a star. And I was in the locker room that night with a huge scrum around him. And a couple of weeks later, he hit the ball over the roof. And so you're right. He did play a role.
And don't forget also, obviously I've read your book and I have it in my library, but don't forget this guy made so many big defensive plays as well too for the Tigers. It was like he had a career year for Detroit. He had over 280, 12 home runs in that short period. He was a terrific defensive outfielder too.
Which is what Rod Allen wasn't. That's why Sparky said, I said, why'd you replace Allen with Rupert? He said, Rod's got a little problem with the leather is the way Sparky put it. But I'm also going to ask him because about this game that I went to, we were talking about with Rich Kincaid down at the Red Wing game last week. In May of 78, they hosted Seattle. I'm at that game as a radio guy, and it goes on and on. And Rupert Jones made two over-the-shoulder catches, as good or better as anything Willie Mays did, the famous catch in the 54.
Yeah, and after the good.
And after the game, Ralph Houck said, those are the two greatest catches I've seen in my career, and they both happened in the same game.
Yeah, we're going to ask Rupert coming up a little later. Now, I must report to you, I know some of you like to listen to our shows early, which is Thursday, the day we tape them, and many of you are listening after that. But I'm happy to say the weather has cleared here in New York City today, so Houston will be playing against the Yankees in the Bronx Thursday night. Shows up 2-1. Now, can you imagine, with Washington already in the World Series, and Houston, obviously, a real good chance to go, how about a JV versus Max pitching matchup in the World Series?
Ooh, well,
would you like that?
Oh, yes.
I would like that.
Who do you like in that game? Which pitcher?
I like – wow.
That's tough, man.
You mean who's going to win the 2-1 game?
Yeah.
That's a tough one.
I think Houston's a better ball club than Washington is, and I think I would go with Washington and with Houston and JV. Now, Denny, here's a question for you. So the Nats are just sitting around right now, and they could be watching what's going to be a long American League Championship Series. Do you think it's a good thing to have this much rest for Washington at this stage, or a bad thing?
They got to take a little time off, 1 or 2 days off, and then come back and play with a little intensity and have a little intra-squad game. And, I don't know if they have to play for money.
Can you play with intensity when it's an intra-squad
game? It's tough. It's really tough, but you have to go out there, and you got to keep that thing going. Whatever that thing is, you got to keep that thing going. And because it's real easy to lose the, you know, the straightforwardness, the intensity. And you don't get it back just because they ring the bell in the first inning.
Is it a good thing or a bad thing?
Give me a yes or no.
Too many. If you're going to be off, if you're going to be off for 5 days, it's too bad. It's not good. But if, you know, 1 day, 2 days, that's okay. That's acceptable. But any more than 2 days is tough.
So if it works out badly, they'll say it's too bad. We had too much time. If it works out well, let's say that the rest really helped us.
Yeah, and you know what else it does? It kind of screws up the pitching rotation, too. Yep. Now they, because they're going to go with their two guys right away. And then who do they go with? Both clubs.
Well, now tonight it's going to be Greinke, who's kind of the throwaway starter behind Verlander and Cole. The Astros could go up 3-1, or it could be 2-2. And then
wouldn't prefer to Zach Greinke as that. I really wouldn't.
Well, he is.
That's
I mean,
a hell of a pitcher.
Yeah, but he hasn't done that well in the playoffs.
Right. I know what you're saying. Yeah, you're right.
And he's not throwing the ball the way he once threw the ball either. I mean, the first game he pitched, his control wasn't very good either. So I'm looking for him to get whacked a little bit tonight.
I saw a stat. That Washington, and they've mentioned it many times, they were 19-31 on May 25th.
Yeah.
Their chances of winning the pennant were 0.1%. In other words, their chances were 1 in 1,000 of winning the pennant. That sounds like long odds, but that shows anything can happen in sports.
Well, you know what's amazing? Who's the kid they give all the money to, $350, $400 million?
You mean
Bryce
Harper?
Harper,
yeah.
You know what? You know what's unbelievable? Doing all this without Harper. Yeah. I think it's marvelous. I think it's the best thing for the Washington Ball Club. I think it's great.
Yeah, and one wag actually tweeted out the other day, because it was his birthday, "Happy 27th birthday, Bryce Harper. Enjoy the World Series." How about that, folks?
Yeah.
Now, in Philadelphia, no less. Now, we have before us at the moment the case of one of the biggest jerks and a-holes who ever lived in sports, and that would be Reginald Martinez Jackson.
Denny's good friend.
asked about Giancarlo Stanton. May I continue? Asked about Giancarlo Stanton not being in the starting lineup for the Yankees due to some kind of quadriceps problem he sustained running to first base in game one Saturday night. Jackson told Sirius XM host Jim Bowden, and I quote, well, he's using the F word, so F. He's missed 150 freaking games, so what the F? So now they come to Reggie and say, "Reggie, that was live." Reggie says, "I almost choked when they said they were live. I immediately spoke to Stanton. I apologized to him. He graciously accepted my faux pas." Reggie was accusing this guy of being a malingerer and soft. You said it, Reggie. Be a man. Stand up and admit it.
Was it really live?
Yeah, they were live when he said that.
Oh, my God. God almighty. And Stanton said it's okay?
Yeah, Stanton graciously accepted his apology.
Maybe Stanton doesn't understand English.
One thing you learn in broadcasting, always assume that the mic is
always
open. Anyway.
Absolutely.
Star Lincoln has another amazing SUV on the lot.
Really?
It's
no
called
kidding.
The Corsair. And I tell you, as the case may be, by naming these amazing vehicles as opposed to the MK, and it was MKC, MKZ, MK this or that, it's boosted sales 20%. And one of the reasons for that is that these are just amazing cars. As you know, I have the Nautilus I get from Starlink, and Hoot McInerney Starlink, and that is. I lease it. I love the audio. I love the technology. I'm excited every time I get behind the wheel. Come see Star's gorgeous showroom, where you'll also see the Aviator. Matthew McConaughey does a nice job advertising that on TV. But check it out. There's so many wonderful SUVs, and Star Lincoln is the place to go. It's the Star Treatment. It's made Hoot McInerney Star Lincoln the premier Lincoln dealership. It's a 12 and Telegraph in Southfield. Look at these amazing SUVs. Pick out the one you want, test drive it. And you can even, if you don't want to go there and just believe how great they are, because I'm telling you that, you can buy them with the effortless ownership experience at starlincoln.com. Order your model, features, color, then just roll in the Star and pick it up. It's Hoot McInerney, Star Lincoln, 12 and Telegraph in Southfield. And Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Management, our guy. Get a complimentary consultation. He'll answer all your financial questions. He'll create a plan for you to help you reach your financial goals. Call Luke at 248-663-4748. Most people spend 45 minutes or less each year in their investments. He'll do that with you the first meeting and monitor your stuff every day thereafter. Whether retirement is fast approaching, whether you're young and need to take care of your family, be prepared for what happens in life, what may happen for the rest of your career. That's Luke Nowacki, 248-663-4748. Securities Investment
Take
Advisor.
Your time. Take your time.
Offered through Royal Alliance Associates.
Spit
products
it out.
Or services referenced here, independent of Royal Alliance. Before
so
we go
easy.
On, I want to give one quick word to the pizza man. Please support the pizza man. That's Freddie the Pizza Man. Support his charity for autism. Buy a Super Bowl square for $75. We have two at freddythepizzaman.com. It's to help support autism. His son has it. And these are impact rooms that these kids have, sensory rooms that'll help so many. So check out Freddie. Go to his website at freddythepizzaman.com. It's F-R-E-D-I. Help him out. Help him fight autism.
So you bought a $75?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so are we splitting it three ways?
Well, you can give me $50 if
all right.
you like.
50. Wait a minute.
25.
I give you 50?
No, no. I was speaking collectively.
I'll go half with you.
You are listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Okay.
All right, let's talk about...
I want to do some basketball. What do you guys
I do, too,
do?
But in a minute. I want to talk about this game tonight and the pitchers.
It's okay. Thursday night.
Yes, game four, yes.
Cole and Verlander versus Scherzer. Listen, those are three guys got a chance of winning the Cy Young, right? Everybody
yes.
agrees with that.
Yes.
And I'm going to give you my surprise. Number one, Cole is going to beat Verlander. Watch. That's going to happen. Cole, I'm going to tell you.
What do you mean going to beat? They were on the same team.
I'm talking about the Cy Young.
Oh, the Cy. Okay, good. Yeah,
okay. And Scherzer, I think, is a go away. He's going to.
I like Jacob DeGrom, Danny. You know that. That's your
I know,
favorite
but he's only
baseball.
Won three games.
But it's separate
year.
Leagues, by
kidding.
The way. Scherzer's
he had
national.
A great year.
So you think Scherzer could win it in the National and Verlander right. and Cole in the American?
Cole in the American yeah. League, yeah. And I believe that. And I said this in the beginning when my Washington club was down two. Remember, I said I still like Washington. They're going to win the whole thing. Watch. They're going to win the whole thing.
They very well could. Anyway, so...
Can I go to basketball
no,
now?
No, no, no.
Where do you want to go?
One more baseball note, please.
After the okay. mailbag.
One more baseball note.
It's all good.
Jeff Passan, I don't want to steal his stuff because he wrote this on the ESPN website, that the postseason ball is dead and that teams are tweaking their internal algorithms specifically to game plan around it. They did it this season, and now they're doing it again in the playoffs because the ball seems very different.
I'm tired of this.
And it's not the colder weather. I told you that, but Mike Schilt, the Cardinals manager, said that it's proven that they're flying 4.5 feet
yeah.
less.
Big deal.
And baseball perspective, this guy named Rob Arthur, studied the drag coefficient, which helps determine how far fly balls fly, said it's significantly greater with a 1 in a million chance that the balls are the same as used in the regular season.
You know what? They're smoking dope. I know it's legal now, but you can't smoke it on the air. And, you know, this is crazy. This thing has gotten so far out of control. I mean, let's presume for a second, just presume for a second that they're right. And the ball either goes 4.5 more or less 4.5, okay? Who cares? 4.5 feet is nothing. It's a pimple on a goat's ass.
Well, I don't know
here's
about that.
Here's what I care about. When Eli did that story, his nose was in his copy.
Yes.
He didn't look up.
He
but
never
I'm, watching,
did.
I'm watching Denny, and what I care about is, as I've been suggesting for so long, getting this show simulcast on some TV channel or network somewhere so people could have seen Denny McClain going apoplectic and bouncing in his seat while you read that story and didn't notice.
Well, in Game 3, Yankees, the last one they played a couple days ago, Didi Gregorius at the plate, two on, two out, Astros 2-0. That off Cole, he hit a 99 mile an hour fastball. They know all this.
Yeah, sure they do.
101.4 miles an hour.
Yeah, okay.
And that it should have gone out, but as if some force field commanded the ball to stop, it fell into Reddick's glove with his back against the fence. Chad Green, Yankees reliever, said, quote, go ahead, Denny.
I can't stand it. This thing is.
I leave it alone.
Let me say this to you. The weather will always have something to do with a baseball game. Oh, whether it's real hot, real cold, and right now we're going through some transition weather in the sense that it's more humid, less humid. The winds have picked up. It's 30 and 40 mile an hour winds back here today. I don't know what it is on the East Coast, but you guys are supposed to be getting this tonight, too. And
no, it's going to be nice.
They can't. take everything at face value. It's the weather right now. The ball hasn't changed. What are they doing? Going down to Haiti, for God's sakes, and making new balls? Is that what they're doing?
You don't know. Eli Zarrett, you guys have been friends for so many, many years. He so knows where your buttons are and how to push them.
Oh, he does.
I thought watching you right now that we were back 40 years and you were going through Pepsi Cola withdrawal with both your arms shaking, pounding the table. I mean, Eli knows how to push your buttons.
He does.
Now, fellas, let's go to Jim Calhoun, the legendary former University of Connecticut coach, basketball Hall of Famer. Did you know this? He's in big hot water.
No.
Calhoun's in big trouble. Now, he's not specifically named in a lawsuit filed by a woman who was fired from the athletic department at UConn.
Sex thing? Another sex thing?
She is still suing the university for millions, charging, as you say, Danny, what else these days? Sexual harassment and discrimination. Now, among the charges in her lawsuit is that Jim Calhoun actually told her that she was hot. Can you imagine any man calling a woman hot? Disgraceful, sexist. Why, if Calhoun can be found guilty of this heinous charge, he deserves to be fired at St. Joe's, where he's coaching now somewhere, small school, and banished to Siberia if the Ruskies would even have him. But how would you take a moral degenerate like that into your country when he had actually called a woman hot?
I'm just going to make this real quick because I don't want to go very far with this. Listen, and I say this, and it's got a little religious poetry to it.
Oh, please. Okay, go ahead.
Or a little religious identification. When God created man and woman, he knew what he was. If he did, I know you two guys have a problem with that. That somebody actually created humanity.
Okay, go ahead.
God knew what he was doing. That's all I'm going to tell you. God knew what he was doing. He made women a certain way that is supposed to attract a man, and vice versa.
That's why we need to cover them in robes and veils, so we don't see their faces, and we're not going to be, sexually aroused. But no,
I want to bring.
Wait a second. Since you're going to bring that up, our very good friend Fred Heumann, the best street reporter I ever had. We worked together at Channel 2. He's been in Lansing for 17 years. Was fired this week, last week, because of a reel that when cameramen go to games, and have you ever been in a production truck? And we have.
You told this story on the last show.
No, he didn't. He was fired for a reel of just shots of cheerleaders, shots of women in the stands that are just kind of funny shots. But nobody was harassed. Nobody was spoken to. It wasn't publicly viewed. It was as sophomoric and boys being boys, with nobody being offended, and was fired for that after 17 years. It's ridiculous. That's the biggest overreaction I've ever heard.
Folks, what we're talking about is when the camera guys between innings, between quarters, and they're taking pictures of the stands of people maybe hugging and kissing, and they got the kissing camera at Tiger Stadium once in a while. That's what we're talking about. Right. They're called honeycuts.
They would maybe zoom in and out, on the cheerleader's breasts, or if they lean over, going on our butt. But this is it's nothing, because nobody was publicly or privately or in any way confronted with this. Nobody knows about this. It's anonymous, and yet it was used in this Me Too day and age. And I'm not knocking Me Too, because there's a good reason for it.
Sure.
And I'm glad that something is being done to respect women's rights. But you're right. Like ultra radical liberalism, it goes too damn far, and we're all liberals.
You know, I have a big thing I was going to get you into right now, Eli, but Jesus, you just dominated the last 15 minutes. Nevertheless,
15 minutes. Go ahead.
As the NBA regular season's about to kick off, as we know, next week, league officials and team front offices are speaking out about the impact of sleep deprivation on players' physical and mental health. So ESPN,
yes. I like that.
ESPN just did a story quoting numerous people around the league and talking to players. Miami Heat center Hassan Whiteside said it's, quote, impossible to get quality sleep during the season. We have – and this is a quote – we have a large population of vampires as it is. Add in the travel and it's more so, said an anonymous general manager. We all want better solutions to this. Now, Eli Zarrett traveled with the Detroit Pistons home and away for 4 years. He knows what he's talking about. Eli, take it away.
Well, I think I mentioned this. It's impossible. You get done. And this used to happen to me just when I did the late news, which isn't like playing a game. I do the late news and get home at 11:30. Need to get up in the morning, but you're pumped up. You're wired. My most intense part of the night was 11:15 when I came on. I'm supposed to go to bed at midnight.
And you loved it.
Well, yeah, I loved it, but the sleep was very, very difficult.
And nobody told you had to do it.
That's, of course, Danny, that's not the point.
It is the point. You're going to say that the people who have been traveling for years and years and years in all these different sports are being deprived of sleep?
Yes, they are. That's the part of the job, though. Of course, they're not going to quit the league because they're not getting enough sleep. But it's and so you get on a plane, you fly to the next location, the next day, back-to-back games. Brutal. And I don't know how the players would do it because I couldn't fall asleep without various inducements.
So, Danny, the point is that fans are paying stupid amounts of money to see NBA games, and they're not getting a top-flight product because these guys are essentially
zombies. Listen, I traveled for 11 and a half years, and I got
not the way they do.
Time out.
Yeah, the way they do.
I'll let you continue. First, I have to say about our radio listeners.
Yes, please.
Radio, listen to the rest, download the No Filter Sports Podcast, but you have been listening to the
and
No
Rupert
Filter
Jones, too.
Sports Podcast. Okay. Right. Denny, in fairness, okay?
Sure.
You pitched once every 4 days. You can't compare that to a basketball player. And by the way, in baseball, you stay in a city for 4 or 5 days also.
That's true. Absolutely.
And so it's different for you. You didn't have to experience the same way. But I'm telling you, you play a night game, and then you're all wired up. You can't go back to the hotel and just fall asleep.
No one ever said we did.
And then the next day, to make sure that they go back and fall asleep, they have a shoot around in the morning. It's a very unnatural lifestyle. Right. I know
but Eli, I got a question for you. Because all the years that I covered the NBA, the league had a rule, and I don't know if they did away with that or it still existed when you were traveling with the Pistons. NBA guys play back-to-back games in different cities all the time.
Right.
If you had a game, let's say, in Detroit on a Thursday night, the league dictated that you had to be on to make sure you got there the first flight out of Detroit the next morning get to your next game in Philadelphia. But teams have private planes.
That was 30 years ago. Yeah. One of the great basketball book I read was Bill Bradley, Life on the Run, because I was a Knicks fan and a big Bill Bradley fan. And he talks about, you know, having to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning after a night game to go to the airport and have to sit in the waiting room and the coffee shop and the amount of time spent in airports. Very, 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 very tough.
It is very tough. But you know what? You get to sleep where you get to sleep. It may not be the greatest sleep in the world, but somehow, some way, I made almost 11 years. Norm Cash made 15. Al Kaline made 18. Mm-hmm. You know, we never screamed about once in a while.
It's not the same. Why don't you understand that?
You know what? It was more difficult to play a doubleheader than it was to fly to Cleveland the next night.
What, and like Amos Rossi or Cy Young, you pitched both ends?
No, I'm talking about what they're doing now. Listen, it's like a 10-hour day. You know, it's a 10-hour day being in the ballpark all day. And that doesn't include getting there and getting out of there and leaving.
Right. You know what they're doing now is all the time in baseball, and everybody knows this. You're playing a series in New York against the Yankees, and right after that, you got to be in Chicago.
Yeah.
You send your starting pitcher for that first game against the White Sox to Chicago a day in advance.
He's not even
at the last game of the Yankees series.
But a lot of times we did it, too. That was always up to the pitcher, by the way, to make that trip.
Anyway, Bob, good story. I agree 100%.
All right, I got something else here.
All right, so
we talked about the Wings promotion, which for 3 days earlier this past week put tickets on sale for just $20. Well, the Pistons, who've had nothing but attendance problems the last few years, both, by the way, in Pontiac or in Auburn Hills, I should say, and in Detroit, following suit. So the lower bowl seats at Little Caesars apparently cost $180 each, and that doesn't include your parking and so on and so forth.
Those are the fancy ones, by the way, where you get to eat and all that, okay, in the clubs.
So they've got 17,000 other tickets, which they're putting on sale on a 2-for-1 ticket
package? No, just in the upper bowl, Bob, only upper bowl.
But you still can get in for $9 or $18. Right. What people don't understand about, you know, cheapening the ticket prices at so many of these games now, somebody got to pay those salaries. Somebody got to pay these guys multi-gazillions of dollars a year. Who's going to do it if you don't have high ticket prices? It can't just be based on advertising and broadcast rights fees.
I think the bulk of all those tickets are corporate tickets, the $180 each tickets, and some, you know, the top 1%, et cetera. Most people, you know, and they give them away a lot. Most people at a Piston game did not pay for the tickets. I'm going to tell you that right now. Unless you're sitting in the upper bowl or in the back of the lower bowl where you can get a ticket for $30 or $40, most people sitting in the arena did not pay for the tickets.
Well, somebody did. Their
company did, yes.
And they got them for free from somebody. But you know what the problem is here with the cheapening of these seats with both the Wings and the Pistons, some other teams? You know what the solution is? That's not the solution. The solution is to win. You can't get a ticket to a Golden State Warriors game with LeBron in L.A. I'm sure every Lakers game sold out. Just win,
actually,
Al Davis said.
This is the problem in sports, Bob, is that every win is matched by a loss. And so not everybody can win. And every year the same amount of wins and losses take place. It's how they're apportioned out. But in Detroit in particular, which is true, and maybe in other cities too, you do have to win, and when you don't, it costs you an attendance. Because the other thing that you didn't mention is every damn game is on TV.
Yeah.
And when I got a 75-inch Sony monitor in my living room with all the accoutrements that go around at home, to go down to Joe Louis.
Jesus, don't say that. My male member right now is shrinking because my TV sets only 65 inches. Damn it, I'm really feeling inadequate.
Well, you also have an inferior model than me also. But in any case, it's very difficult to.
You guys will be holding hands here in another 10 minutes. And there's one other thing with discounting the tickets. It's a nice way to promote the product. Maybe the guy comes down there and all of a sudden he'll want to see three or four more games before the end of the season. You know, that helps their other sales, whether it's merchandise, whether it's hot dogs and drinks and whatever. But, you know, it's a cheap way to promote your own ball club.
But again, Denny, if you're the New York Yankees or the Golden State Warriors, just to name two, you ain't got to do no promotion.
You don't have to do that. You only have to do it if you need
if you're
to
not,
do it.
If you're not winning.
That's right.
Hey, do you guys have any thoughts on – I don't want to beat a dead horse, but now there's another thing going on with LeBron James and what he said – people are charging. He doesn't believe in free speech because he ripped the Houston Rockets general manager who made the initial comments about China and Taiwan that set up this whole brouhaha. How do you feel about what LeBron said?
I'll tell you what he said, and I'll tell you how I feel. He said of Daryl Morey, who was the general manager of the Rockets, he wasn't, quote from LeBron, he wasn't educated on the situation at hand. Well, that's not true, because Daryl Morey and the Rockets are big in China, because Yao Ming played for the Rockets, and Daryl Morey knew exactly what he was saying. And so the problem with what James is getting ripped for now, and by the way, I think LeBron James, I give him credit. He's been socially active, whether you agree with him or not. He's taken on the president. He signed that college bill last week to get them paid, even though he didn't even go to college. So he's socially, he's active on social issues, whether you agree with him or not. He has changed the face of athletes in that because politics, let's face it, politics is all over sports. You cannot separate sports and politics. The point is, Daryl Morey's comment created huge financial issues for the NBA. So it comes down to money, and LeBron is being criticized for the first time since the decision, I think, which is a bad experience, a bad view 10 years ago when he went to the Miami Heat. Miami. But, you know, LeBron's got a lot of money tied up in China, millions and millions and millions, including Space Jam, his movie. He's got business deals there. So I think there was some financial, rather than sticking up for free speech, which he should have done, which the NBA did, he kind of ripped Morey for that.
It's called financial consideration.
Right. But, you know, can I just add one more thing?
Yeah.
To pretend that sports and politics shouldn't miss is ridiculous, or mix, because it's all politics.
Over. Well, what you mean is they shouldn't mix, but they do mix, and they're going
to
mix.
Well, they have to mix because they're all business, politics, and sports. It's a triangle there. How about the whole thing we just mentioned with LeBron and the NCAA coming in by attack by California? That's not politics. That's not business. You got Rihanna turning down a Super Bowl invitation at halftime in support of Kaepernick.
Can I say something about
the Braves and the Tomahawks? It's all political. Come on now.
And I'm going to tell you something, too.
Go ahead. The thought police are coming to break down my door and take me away in shackles.
Not your thoughts, Bob.
God, it's Rihanna hot.
Hey, why?
It's Rihanna hot.
Why are the Olympics at 100 degrees plus going to be in Tokyo in August when athletes are going to be keeling over
and pollution. And not only,
why? Because TV insists that it happen then, so it doesn't interfere with the NFL season, which happened in 64 in Tokyo, where they did it in October, where it's a little bit cooler. So why is the World Cup going to be in Qatar or Qatar? You don't think there's politics involved there? It's everywhere. Why did they finally, in Iran, let women attend one particular soccer game?
No, now they can go to all of them. They can sit separately.
Oh, my goodness.
And let me tell you how much it's changed, because it certainly has changed. More players are speaking out in social media. They're doing other things, joining causes and what have you, carrying signs.
Right.
Appearing at strikes and what have you. When I went to Vietnam 2 years in a row, once with Bob Hope and once for Major League Baseball. And when I came back the second year, I had knew after the first year that based upon every soldier, and our warrant officer was a kid from Warren, Michigan, and he kept telling us how bad it was over here. We shouldn't be here. We're not fighting to win. We're doing crazy things over here. Well, once you hear that for 3 or 4 weeks, you know, it begins to settle in just like anything else. And sooner I took that back with me, talked a little bit about it. And then the second year when I went over with the Hope thing, I got louder and louder. When I came home, just to show you how things have changed, and we all know this, just to show you, and I did an article with one of the New York papers when I got off the plane, met me in San Francisco. Why? I still don't know why, other than I took 4 guns with me and I tried to smuggle them in.
Oh, that was smart. Go ahead.
Yeah, that wasn't a good idea. And lo and behold.
One of many bad ideas you had.
So what happened is the guy goes through a whole scenario and writes this big story. And lo and behold, the next thing that happens is Jim Campbell calls me 4 or 5 days later and says this. He says, you know you're a Detroit Tiger? I said, yes, sir. He says, let me tell you something. The next time I hear Vietnam out of your mouth, you're going to play ball in Vietnam. He's, by the way, they don't have a team there.
That's
too bad you didn't have the union back you on that one. Say, Jim, shut the F up, pal. I'm going to speak my mind.
Didn't work that way.
Let me give you the ultimate politics in sports.
Yeah.
The greatest moment in the 20th century in American sports.
68 Olympics, Mexico City.
No. The Miracle on Ice.
Yeah.
And why was it big? Politics. U.S., Russia.
Russia.
It's all about politics. And by the way,
the world stopped that day, didn't it, for a couple of hours?
And I'm sure I told you the story, right? I walked out of that game. I've told Bob that story before.
Why?
Because I had the Olympic flu. I was living a very bad lifestyle over there, and I got very, very sick. The game was at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It was the last day I was on the air, and I left that thing just staggering back to my housing there. And,
I'm not even going to ask you why you were sick.
I was sick. I was doing some really bad stuff. And
I was legitimately sick. I just want to add one thing about LeBron James, whom I've never met before. He seems like a nice person, but I've never thought he was the sharpest tool in the proverbial shed. I remember when he had that big press conference on ESPN to announce where he was going to play basketball, and he said, and I quote, "Next year, I'm going to take my talents to South Beach." And as a South Florida resident, I'm sitting there thinking, where's he going to play basketball on South Beach? Is it like a little pickup game at a concrete court or something? Because actually, Miami Heat play in the city of Miami, not on South Beach.
Bob, you could nitpick a woman doing knitting. You know, I mean, it's so bizarre when you go off on one of these tangents.
I'm going to.
Are you accusing me of being a pedant?
No, I'm accusing you of being a tangent.
Let's. Okay, we're going to talk to Rupert Jones, and then we're going to have our. Mailbag segment, as we always do. Let's dial them up. Let's get going. And we welcome in Rupert Jones. Rupert, great talking to you. I haven't seen you in 35 years since the celebration of the 84 series. How you been, man?
I've been doing real well. I've overcome a lot of things in my life, but hey, I'm better off for all the things that I went through.
You know what? We can start right there, and that is that you. I know your story. You ran into the wall in Oakland before they, for some reason, it wasn't padded, suffered what's called a PBI, which is a brain injury, and you really paid the price for that. And did that lead to bipolar depression and all the things that you've battled so bravely over the years?
Well, how did you know all this, man?
Man, we do our homework.
Because I'm a research guy. Actually, I heard you, as I researched you, I heard you on a podcast in Chicago some time back with a host who suffered from a depression, and you kind of opened up there. So I listened to that, and I'm very familiar with bipolar depression. I have a daughter who suffered from it, so I know all about it. And but are you saying that that banging into the wall and suffering this PBI, which I don't know what exactly I have the definition here, that led to all types of brain issues that you've dealt with all these years?
I like to say that, you know, people look at you and you you're making excuses for what happened to you, but you know, it is what it is. And I lived through some very trying times. As a matter of fact, it really didn't dawn upon me what I was going through, what I suffered from, until 2010. Mm. You remember Justin Barnaud?
Yeah.
Yeah. Justin Barnaud slid in the second base and hit his head on the second baseman's knee. And he was out of baseball for almost a year.
Yes.
And I started thinking, I said, well, you know, I ran into a wall. So I started doing research, and lo and behold, I had a lot of things that happened to me was consistent with traumatic brain injury.
No.
Well, that led to some alcohol problems, didn't it? Because you couldn't sleep at night without alcohol?
Yes. That led to, in the late 90s, it led to some alcohol issues. And finally, I stopped drinking alcohol, but the pain and suffering got worse. But I had to do it that way.
And you also admitted that the way to treat this brain injury, they give you a stimulant of some form, and with no real treatment diagnosed back then, and there was nothing somebody suffering like you. You did cocaine, which was a stimulant that actually helped you deal with your brain problems.
You know, it's ironic too. When I did cocaine, it did help me tremendously, but you can't do cocaine because it becomes addiction. And,
sure.
And you get to, you know, you start falling into other habits. But ironically, 30 years later, I get prescribed a stimulant for part of my treatment.
Right, right.
How are you today? Are you rocking and rolling? Can you still play? Can you still hit third?
He can't still play, but he's lifting weights all the time.
How you know? You guys know more about me than I do.
Well, listen, Rupert, we got to tell you. Rupert, we got to tell you, we got cameras planted all over your house.
That was Denny McClain talking. Your careers didn't quite overlap, but we were talking before, and you wanted to ask Mr. McClain something, you said. What was that?
Mr. McClain, you won 30 games one year.
Yes, sir.
You got,
no, 31.
You won 31 games.
Right.
You had 37 decisions?
I had, 37 decisions.
You won more games than these guys get decisions nowadays. Think about that.
Yep, it's a whole different game, isn't it?
You won more games than these guys start in a year.
That's true.
Hey, Rupert, are you criticizing modern baseball, like with all the home runs and strikeouts? Go ahead, speak your mind about where the game is now.
Hey, all I know is I played in Dodger Stadium. I played in a lot of them ballparks, and that ball is flat in them ballparks too easy.
You really believe that, huh?
I think the ball is on steroids.
Good for you. I agree with you, too. Hey, you know.
Hey, one more thing. Go ahead, please. Hey, but ain't it amazing when you get in the playoffs, a lot of them home runs stop going at the ballpark?
Yeah, it's called good pitching.
Yes, sir.
It's amazing. It's isn't it amazing how good the pitching becomes and how bad the hitting becomes?
You got that right, man. Good pitching always stops good hitting.
It always does.
Let's go.
Hey, Rupert, have you ever thought about a new career at your age as a stand-up comedian? Because I got to be honest with you, you're doing real well now.
Well, I want to stay in my lane. I don't want to get out of my lane right now. Yeah. You got lanes too fast.
So Rupert, so after you're playing for the Yankees and you have the terrible head injury in 1980. By the way, you sued Charlie Finley over that. I assume that was for not fixing the outfield wall. But so the next 3 years you're with San Diego and they cut you after 83. 84 begins and Pittsburgh signs you to a minor league deal and they cut you in spring training. You thought your career might have been over. The Tigers, to your surprise, sign you to play at Evansville. You have a great first couple of months of the season down there. They call you up, and then you get into town. And this can, and I wrote a book in the 84 Tigers, and I'd forgotten. The second day you're here, June 7th, the Tigers had lost two straight to the Blue Jays, and they're only 3.5 games up. People forget that they think they just went 35-5 and won by a million games. You hit a three-run homer off Jim Clancy to break a 1-1 tie. You got your first curtain call. Do you remember that game and that moment and how it must have felt to go from a minor leaguer thinking your career might be over at age 29 to now being the toast of the town in front of 40,000 people that night?
Well, number one, I never thought my career was ended. When I went to spring training with Pittsburgh, I had a great spring training. The only reason they didn't sign me was because they had guys with guaranteed contracts and they couldn't move them. So they couldn't sign me. But the Tigers called me in mid-April. Well, I had, by playing well in spring training, I knew I still had some in the tank. And therefore, when I went to Evansville, I played well. And I had a contract that says, if I'm not in the big leagues by June 1st, I can ask for my release. Well, when June 1st came around, the Tigers asked me, we're trying to make a roster move, but we can't, bring you up right now. And they said, would you wait and see? And my agent told me I had a few teams that was interested in me right now. And I told my agent, I said, the Detroit Tigers are the only team that gave me a chance. I said, I will wait for them. And I waited about 5 days and then, 6 days, and they called me up.
Did you, who was your general manager at the time, Campbell?
Was it Campbell?
I think it was LaJoy.
Bill LaJoy.
No, Campbell was still the president.
He was still the president. When you negotiated at the end of that year, because you went to California the next year, right?
Yes, I did.
So what happened? What happened with the front office in Detroit? Why you didn't stay in Detroit? Because you had a good year. You hit 284.
You had a great year.
40 RBIs and 9 home runs. I mean,
12 home runs, which is the highest home run ratio of his career, by the way.
And you played on a team that won 104 games. You had a lot to do with that.
Yeah, but I got a family to feed, too.
Yeah, sure, of course. I understand that. But what happened?
I thought the Tiger offer was low.
Okay.
Because, there was some controversy behind me, but I felt that I contributed enough and I showed them that I still can play.
Right.
And the contract was low, and the option year was low. But they wanted 2 years of my life, I felt it was low. Now, if the first year had been, maybe low, and then the second year, the option year, they said, we'll give you more. But it wasn't that way.
Yeah, you didn't know this. That's typically the way Campbell negotiated contracts. He was just a tough son of a bitch, boy.
And so what did they do? They replaced Rupert with Nelson Simmons and Jim Weaver, who never amounted to anything much. Well, a couple of weeks later, June 24th, against the Brewers, 40,000 people again. It was just amazing what was going on. I can't imagine you coming from Evansville, which is a two-stoplight town in Indiana, to play it here in Detroit. And then you hit one off Tom Telman that bounced off the roof, then went over, bounced on a Park Riviera, and then bounced into the front door of the Checker Cab Company. And then you took another standing ovation. So that must have been a great thrill, too. What do you remember about that?
Well, when I hit it, I didn't think it was going to go that far. I knew I had hit it at the ballpark, hit it for a home run, but I didn't know it was going to go at the ballpark. And when it left, I was kind of surprised. But I'm going to tell you that year was the one that I really enjoyed was the one I hit off Seaver.
Off of Seaver?
I hit one off Seaver.
Did you?
The first time I faced Seaver, the bases were loaded, and I hit a double off the left center field wall to knock in 3 runs.
Wow.
Next time I faced Seaver, Seaver threw me that cut fastball in on my hands and broke my back.
White Sox. Yeah. He was at the White Sox.
White Sox then. Yeah,
it was no, he was with Cincinnati. He was with Cincinnati then.
Well, you
the
couldn't
first have... time I faced him.
Are you talking about the I-75 exhibition series?
No, Rupert, that doesn't make sense because that's the National League.
1981.
Oh, 81.
Oh, 81. Oh, okay, I get it.
We got you
now.
1981, Seaver pitched for Cincinnati.
Right.
First, the second time I faced him, I put a double. He threw that cut fastball and broke my back. Next time I come up, he threw that same cut fastball and broke my back. I see Seaver 3 years later. He's in Chicago with the White Sox.
Right.
He throws me that cut fastball the first time. He breaks my back. So that's three times in a row he broke my back. So I go into the dugout, and my bat is like 34, 31.
Right.
And Larry Herndon had a 35, 35.
Yeah.
So Larry, give me a 35, 35. And he looked at me like I was crazy. I said, give me the bat, Larry. I went the next time, and I hit it, and I said, yeah, I got him. And I looked up. We in Comiskey Ballpark now.
Right.
I looked up, and I said, oh, I got him in the second deck.
Wow.
And then the ball disappeared into the night.
Yeah. And that's
and
what we're referring to, the home run that you hit in Detroit over the roof, that's when you picked up your nickname, Rooftop.
Yeah, Rooftop Roof. Hey, you know, I got another question
Hold on.
Okay,
yeah, sorry. Yeah. Kenny, you pitched in Chicago Comiskey Ballpark. That's a big ballpark.
Big ballpark.
I hit it out of everything.
Yeah, over the roof?
Oh, that was in Comiskey. Oh, man.
You hit that? Wait a minute.
You hit the ball over the roof in right field?
I hit the ball over everything.
Do you know how far that is?
That's why I said I remember that, Denny. I hit it over everything.
I mean, that's,
so that's how you got the nickname,
Rupert. No, Rupert, that's that. Rupert. That's halfway back to Detroit.
Denny, I hit it over everything.
Oh my
I saw Harry
Baines
almost 30 years later,
oh
and
my
he said,
God.
Hit the ball out of the Comiskey ballpark.
Hey, Rupert.
I can't tell you how far that is.
I want to talk, and I mentioned this earlier in the show before we brought you here, but in 1978, you were in, I think, your second year with Seattle, and it was May. There were 12,000 people at the ballpark. I'm a radio reporter, and I want to get this game over so I can get my interviews and get up at the crack of dawn and do my show. You made a catch, I believe, that sent it into extra innings. And I'd seen that Willie Mays over-the-shoulder catch since I was a kid in the 54 World Series. Then I think it was off Mickey Stanley in the 11th. You did it again. Over-the-shoulder catch. We in the press box were absolutely aghast. And after the game, Ralph Houk, who had been in baseball for 40 years, said those are the two greatest catches I've ever seen. Do you remember that night? You better remember that night, because I do.
Okay. As a matter of fact, they were off Steve Kemp. They both were off Steve Kemp.
Okay.
And I was running. I had my back to the infield. And
I know.
I caught them both around the center field wall with my back to the infield.
It was amazing.
I had 13 putouts that night.
Oh, my God.
I had 13 putouts that night, and I had guys throwing whiskey bottles down on top of me. Old Taylor.
Now, was that in Chicago?
No, I was covering the game here in Detroit.
It was in Detroit.
Our fans were throwing whiskey bottles at you.
Man, they were throwing whiskey bottles down from the center field and center field wall. You know, out in the center field. Old Taylor, Old Crow, I picked them all up.
you could bring booze to the ballpark
Anything.
Yeah. Oh, Rupert.
Rupert, on that subject, I have been telling anybody who will listen all these years that the downfall of the 84 Tigers going into 85 was when they didn't bring you back. You made so many great defensive players down the stretch in 84 and so many big hits. Just talk about that and some of the most memorable plays you made.
Well, in hindsight, I should have came back to Detroit because playing in Detroit, I had 1 hour, 2 hour. I had 2 hour plane ride. That's about a 4-leaf flu.
Yeah.
all the games are on the same time zone. You know, so you know you always acclimate to the same time zone.
Sure.
A 2 hour flight, but the longest. We could bust to Cleveland, so I should have stayed in Detroit. I mean, pure and simple. I look back on that and I kick myself in the butt every time.
You bus to Cleveland?
We could bus from Detroit to Cleveland.
They did a lot.
We never did.
I did a story in 85, I think, called If It's Tuesday, It Must Be Cleveland. They took the bus. I think I did it
well,
half the time.
I think there's a reason why, Rupert, that we flew over there and you took the bus. We were a better team.
I'm sure you remember that, Rupert. All that year it was, who's better, the 68 Tigers or the 84 Tigers?
All year long.
But
hey, Denny.
Yeah.
Your team was a lot old. your team was a lot older than ours, so consequently, you guys couldn't ride the bus.
Yeah, hell, we couldn't. That's true. Rupert, we couldn't find our asses by then with both hands.
Will you let the man answer the question?
What?
Rupert, again, tell us about some of the biggest moments you had.
We already did. I already told you. Rooftop homer. The three on homer off
a little more.
The three on homer off Clancy.
And Seaver.
No, I got another one. We were playing in September against Toronto. September 16th, as a matter of fact. And Toronto was right on our butt. I mean, everybody thought we had a big lead, but Toronto was right on our butt. And I hit a home run early in the game to give us a 2-1 lead. And then late in the ball game, Cliff Johnson came to the plate on a pinch hit. He hit the ball, and it was out of the ballpark. And I jumped up over the fence and caught it. And, you know, it saved the game.
Yeah.
So everybody was excited. They was really excited, the fans and everybody, except Alex Grammer. He was not excited.
Why wasn't he excited?
Because Alex Grammer used to hit me fly balls every day.
Yeah.
And towards the end of our practice, he would hit balls that was over the fence, and I would jump up and catch it.
Yeah.
Or I would miss it, but I would jump up and catch it. Yeah. I was good, man.
We know you were good.
In fact, that night...
We've seen a lot of video.
When you look at the attendance figures...
Hold on. Let me finish the story.
Go ahead.
So Alex looked at me. He said, "You better catch that damn ball. I hear it to you every day."
2-1, Wilcox beat Steeb before 45,000 people at Tiger Stadium. Yes.
Rupert, I want to ask you a question. This is the most serious question I'm going to ask you today. You ready? All right. What the hell does the middle name Sanderson mean?
That was my real father's last name.
Okay, you've answered that. That takes care of that.
That was a hard hitting question.
Yeah, that's a really tough question.
It's tongue in cheek.
Thank you for agreeing to answer that, Rupert, because I thought that you might think that was a little over the edge.
Rupert, you know what? Everybody listening to us right now wants to know. What did you do for a living after you left baseball? Are you still working? You're living in San Diego, right?
I sold insurance for about 29 years.
Good for you.
And it's about the only profession I could have played. I could have worked because of the head injury. I could not go 9-to-5. If I went to 9-to-5, I'd have been broke.
Did you get a job with an organization, a hitting instructor, or anything?
When they sent me home, I came home and I didn't go back. I really didn't want to go back.
Yeah.
I had too much pain.
That sounds like. Yeah.
And also on that show, you had mentioned the one I heard in Chicago that when you're on medication for brain injuries or mental illness, don't go off your medication. That's very good advice. And I got personal experience to say, I'm really glad you said that. And I hope everybody who suffers from depression or bipolar stays on their medication, because when you go off it, really bad things happen. Anyway, great talk. Anybody have anything else for Rupert? Great talking to you.
I just want to say you did a great job. You were funnier than hell, a lot of personality. You should go into show business. I keep telling you that.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, you know what? I love my life. Hey, I wrote a book, though.
You did?
Okay.
What's the name of the book?
What's the name of the book?
It's going to be called, I'm not going to tell you right now, but I'm about 6 months away from it being published.
Okay. Because I was going to say, if you're not going to tell us the name, it's tough to sell.
Well, Rupert, when it's ready to go, you let us know.
I might change the name by then, though.
Well, you just let us know, and we'll promote the hell out of it for you, all right?
You promise?
We promise. Absolutely.
Hey, Rupert, I want to ask you a question that Denny brought up before we got you on. Do you go to, these baseball memorabilia and card shows and sign autographs for a bunch of money? Because Denny's got some work for you.
Well, I come to Detroit and sign, but that's about the only place I come to sign. Yeah. Detroit's the only fans that really love me.
That's right.
When is the last time you were in the Detroit market, Michigan market?
About a year and a half ago.
All right, I got one for you. I'll call you after the show.
Hey, Rupert, a trivia question. Who did the Tigers release to make a roster spot for you?
Rod Allen.
Okay, you do remember that. Yeah.
Oh, very good. Yeah, very good. Very, very good.
Anyway, great talking to you. Let us know when the book comes out, and we'll help you. And thanks for helping us today. You're very entertaining. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Have a great day.
All right. Y'all too.
Good guy.
Good guy, yeah.
That was, I mean, I got to tell you, man, that was some really good stuff there. I
He's very enthusiastic and energetic. And you know, this is sports, man. First of all, the terrible injury he suffered.
Yeah, terrible.
The fact that he was able to come back for it without proper medication. He took cocaine, and as he said, in 2000, when he was diagnosed again, they gave him a stimulant, which is what, obviously, for his particular brain injury was needed. But the point being, he was kind of out of baseball.
Yeah.
Nobody picked him up. He's in a minor league contract. And for whatever reason, and let's give Bill LaJoy credit, he had his eyes on Rupert. He figured he'd need a left-handed bat. Yeah. You know, Herndon was a right-handed hitter. I don't think Herndon, they'd come over that spring or the year before from maybe a couple of years earlier from San Francisco, wasn't sure if he would hold up during the season. He filled in for Lemon in center and Herndon in left. And it was a great roster.
And the other thing is
– best thing in his career.
They were still negotiating the same way in 83, 4, 5, 6. Yeah. And that was they gave you short money on the first year. Because they gave me a three-year contract in 1970, I think it was. And the first year they gave me 60. No, 69 they gave me 60. And with a promise that I'd get to 100 and a quarter in 3 years. I said, 3 years? I said, yeah. I just won 30 this year. Why can't I get that money this year? And we'll take it a little bit away every year.
I don't.
Campbell would not budge. And I think I told you. He said, well, if you want to play in Japan, go ahead. Right. They will never take an American unless I approve it.
He was a cheapskate.
You know what, boys? That was going on all over. I remember a conversation I had many years ago with the legendary Michigan State pitching star and Baseball Hall of Famer Robin Roberts. He won 28, I think, in 1953.
He's a great guy.
And the next year, he won 21, and they told him he was taking a pay cut. So what, 21 games this year? What do you mean I'm taking a pay cut? Yeah, but you won 28 the year before.
In fairness.
I mean, this was going on all over.
Well, this was 30 years later, and they did have longer-term contracts then. Yeah. But, you know, the point being, and I'm sure the Tigers shorted him, as you said, they give you short money the first year on the basis that you stay, and then they get rid of you before the other one kicks in. But he was a backup player, and they did have Herndon in left, Chet in center, and Gibby in right.
Yeah.
So he wasn't a starter. And so that affected how much they could pay him.
That's right. That's exactly right.
All right, want to go to the mailbag?
What about the mailbag?
Let's go to the mailbag.
Mailbag. Bob's this is mailbag.
Yes, sir. Brandon, I'm going to need your help on this because I want Eli and Denny to see it. I know damn well they haven't. Mm-hmm. Soft Weekly is his handle on Twitter. Brandon knows who this is. He posted the most amazing video just this morning asking folks to listen to our brand new No Filter show when it, quote unquote, drops later today. He has a moving picture which shows three bodies in the stands at a sports event falling over and dropping into the seats with the heads of all three of us superimposed on the bodies and bobbing up and down. That if you're on Twitter, folks, you got to see this.
But there's no such magazine as Soft Magazine, is there?
It's a parody. About a year ago, Drew Lane had mentioned that there's too many soft people and they should be in a soft magazine. And so a couple different listeners created accounts. This particular one is at Soft Magazine DMP.
Funnier
if you want to see the GIF.
At Soft Magazine DMP, the three of us falling under a seat in the stands. Here's an
old and really good friend of ours, Eli's and mine, Bill Collins, who writes, and I quote, I'm listening to the October 14th podcast. That play-by-play announcer calling Tobin Rhodes' ramble during the 57 NFL title game is Ray Scott. And he wants to know if we remember his minimalist
Ray Scott.
No, that was Van Patrick.
It was not.
It did not sound like Van Patrick. It did not.
It wasn't Bob Reynolds.
You got that? Well, wait a minute.
He says it was Ray Scott.
I think it was Ray Scott.
A lot of younger people don't know who that was. Yeah, he was a great television national play-by-play NFL announcer.
Great broadcast.
Now, which play was it again? From the Lions,
it was Tobin Rhodes scrambling for a touchdown, and the announcer excited.
Oh, maybe it was. Maybe it was
Ray Scott.
Yeah,
you know, it's funny. I was almost in awe as a young sportscaster. I met Ray Scott in the visitors' locker room at Tiger Stadium one time. He wasn't doing national games anymore. I said, "Mr. Scott, you know what happened?" I used to like you. He said, "CBS went to him and said, we don't want any of your stuff where you're telling it like it is about our games. We want you just to call the games. None of your opinions or else you're done." And they fired him because Ray was telling it like it was.
He had the voice, the frozen tundra.
Oh, he had a great voice.
Now, I wonder if Denny, and by the way, Bill Collins writes this as well. Denny, do you remember Ray Scott from his 1971 season with your Washington Senators team?
I do. I do.
He did the Senators TV broadcast in 71.
Well, he didn't do the whole year. Shelby Whitfield had a lot of play-by-play.
ABC Radio in New York.
He fired me.
Who, Shelby Whitfield?
Yeah, yeah.
He was a real horse's ass.
Fired me from
You know who his best friend was?
I didn't deserve to
I'm going to tell you this. You know who his best friend was? This will tell you a lot about him. Ted Williams.
Oh, jeez. All right, Bob, what else? By the way, you're going to give the number at any point? You're going to give the number at the end? Or you're going to give the number now?
No, I want you to do it now.
760-89-BALLS, 760-89-BALLS for a text message or a voicemail, and asknofilter@gmail.com. Asknofilter@gmail.com.
And you can tweet all three of us, at Eli Zarrett, at MU2Denny, and at Bob Page Sports.
We're gonna
here's Mike Damick from Northville, Michigan. Love the show and a big fan. I found these pictures. Did you see these? Of Eli from the 1980 WRAF concert guide. Some great stuff. Long-haired, hippy-dippy sportscaster Eli Zarrett doing his thing. I love these pictures that people sent us.
It really is. Pretty cleaned up by then. Yeah. He says, I'm a regular listener.
I love Bob's great comments followed by the veteran knowledge of Eli and
Denny. So do we, Bob.
We love Bob's insightful comments.
Will you guys shut up? He's complimenting you, too. Followed by the veteran knowledge of Eli and Denny. They're just outstanding. I outbid a person at a charity auction for a signed Denny McClain picture from the 68 World Series. Denny is great. And I'm a huge fan of Eli, especially from his days of JJ and the morning crew on WRIF.
Oh my God,
always remember Eli's sports commentaries. Keep up the great work. Now, are you happy that you got such glowing praise? Good.
I was the first FM sportscaster in Detroit.
Yes, you were. I used to listen to you all the time on WABX, and I thought I got to meet this guy someday because you were really good. Sports with Eli with that sweet Georgia Brown theme song whistling in the background. That's good stuff. Our regular listener, Bill Newick from Dearborn Heights. Did ex-Green Bay Packer Dick the Bruiser hire wrestling refs to officiate the FL's game on Monday? And did Patricia and Martha Firestone Ford do something to anger the refs?
Well, I don't know what you're talking about, young man. I hardly even know the players on my own team, let alone the referees.
Answer no. Okay,
Edward Jones writes, I really enjoy listening to every episode, and we like this stuff. I'm in my mid-30s, so I'm not sure if I'm in your target demo, but this is the best sports talk I've listened to since the heyday of WDFN many years ago. And, Bob, the first time I heard the term FLs was from you, and it fits flattering. Perfectly. Well, I mean, the first time you heard it is because I invented it. That's why the first time you heard it was from me. I can honestly say I've never been emotionally invested in the Lions, and I don't know how people in this town can be fans of perpetual losers each and every year. Keep up the great works. That's Eddie in Livonia.
Well, the Lions would be 3-1-1 if not for the abomination in Green Bay, and we'd be praising them.
If only. Give me a break.
Keep going.
Listen, Lions.
Let me just say this, okay? This Lion team is better than what we have seen.
It's the best team we've seen in a long time.
It's the best team we've seen in a long time. It's not fair to say same old Lions. Right. I thought they continued to show their improvement the other night. And overall, they were the better team than the Green Bay Packers, though they did not get the decision. Continue on, please.
Joe Lyons, I've been loving the podcast. I used to watch the Eli and Denny show, so I was so excited to be able to hear them now on the radio. I'd never heard of Bob before the podcast, but he's fun to have in the mix. Going into the Pete Rose interview, Eli, you mentioned that he was always a good guy to reporters. I said that too, when many other athletes weren't. We can tell – he wants to tell some stories of guys that were jerks. God, we go on about Reggie Jackson and Seaver was a jerk.
You know what?
There are too many.
Yeah,
there are too many guys.
And frankly – whether they're a jerk or not, the bottom line as a reporter is you just want somebody who will give you a good answer. Sometimes the jerks give great answers. Bill Laimbeer gave some great answers when he was acting like a jerk. So we're kind of shield ourselves against being insulted because it kind of happens. You get guys in bad moods after losses. You try a guy a lot of times and think he may talk to you, but he's still upset. So you never know what you're going to get. But the bottom line is it isn't whether they're jerks or not. It's do they give you some sound bites that are interesting, that your listeners will like, and that you can play off of.
And let me tell you one thing about Reggie Jackson. I ran into him, I don't know, 3-4 months ago to show up in Virginia. And I was shocked. I was shocked. He walked over to me. Denny, how the hell are you? Hugged me.
Yeah.
I thought I was either being robbed or knocked in the balls. Something bad was about to happen.
No, I could tell.
He stood there for 20 minutes and talked to me. He asked about Sharon, asked about the kids.
Wow.
I mean, I just couldn't have been the same Reggie. It just could not.
Well, when I met him, when we were doing the show in the early 90s, he was in town at some capacity, and he was really friendly, and you guys talked a lot, and I stood there thinking, this idiot jerk is the guy that totally ignored me the last time I talked to him, and here he is, you know, treating you like you're his best friend. Anyway, is that it, Bob? You got anything else?
No, it's not.
And, you know, we played together. You know, we played together for a little while. He was the rat in the clubhouse. Every time we had a meeting during the strike, Reggie
would get
on the phone and called Finley and told him exactly what we were talking about.
Oh, he was turncoat.
I've never heard
treasonous. Treasonous.
Just terrible.
But to get back to the comments that Eli made a moment ago, which were, you know, very well done about what we expect from players and stuff, this is why I invented the nickname for Whitey Herzog. Whitey, get that effing thing out of my face, Herzog. Herzog would be standing in the visitor's locker room in Tiger Stadium. He's talking to three or four writers. Well, I'm not a writer. I'm a radio guy. So I'm going to come over there. I'm going to put my microphone close enough to him to pick up what he's saying because I have the right to do that. He stops the interview always. Get that thing out of my face. Gee, why do you – that's how I do my job. I'm a member of the media, too.
Did he really say that to you?
Oh, hell yes. He said just not just to me, anybody who had a microphone, get that thing out of my face.
My question is not what Whitey said. Did Bob just drop the F-bomb a moment ago?
No, I didn't. I shielded it.
Did he? Did he fake it? Okay.
So Joe Lyons continues on.
Let Brandon be the judge of that. He says borderline. We'll have to listen back.
Brandon said on a scale of 1 to 10, it's about a 6.
So Joe Lyons continues on.
Time out. Can I add something to that?
Sure.
When I got into the business, there was great prejudice against broadcast guys.
Yes. Hell yes.
Because back then it was all newspapers and Joe Falls and Jerry Green and Charlie Vincent and whoever else. And we especially TV. And
I'm going to tell you why. Go ahead.
And the only radio guys, you had guys doing updates on WWJ and you know, little stuff on WJRS. There really weren't radio guys per se. And TV guys never showed up on a regular basis. So they were looked as kind of interlopers. So anybody who wasn't a beat writer or a baseball writer was looked at as somebody you can disrespect.
Right.
And of course it's changed on because now the writers are TV guys also.
Yeah.
But yeah, you couldn't get into the press. The press box was run by the Baseball Writers Association of America. I had to go through a writer to get approval to cover them.
You almost
as
had to
a
go
broadcaster.
Through a committee.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
you know, the first time.
Sadly, that's all changed. The newspapers have become rather irrelevant.
Thank God. And let me tell you something. Now, here I am a player, right? I wanted to go in the press box. Campbell said, I'll meet you up in the press box about the fifth or sixth inning because I was pitching the next day. And I said, all right, I'll see you then. Do you know Watson Spoelstra kept me by the elevator for like 7 or 8 minutes until Campbell gave me an okay to come up there?
You weren't allowed in the press box.
The legendary Detroit news sports writer, Watson Spoelstra.
Watson Spoelstra.
Now, my mentor at Michigan State was the longtime sports information director, the late Fred Stabley. Fred's down in Lakeland one year at a Tigers exhibition game. He's sitting in the stands. He turns around. He looks up at the press box, and there is Hal Middlesworth, the Tigers public relations director.
Great man.
I loved Hal. So Hal's waving to Fred. He says, Fred, come on up. Come on up. So Fred, oh, sure. So Fred goes up to the press box. He's sitting there. And Joe Falls, whom Fred had known, obviously, for 30, 40 years, is sitting down to his left. He waves, hey, Joe. And all Joe Falls does is stare at him. He's staring at Fred Stabley. Finally, after about 5 minutes of this, he gets up and he comes over to Fred and Hal Middlesworth. And he says, Fred, I've been thinking about this. I'm going to let you stay in the press box, but just this one time.
Yeah.
That's what the Baseball Writers Association of America did. And the whole thing was started. The Detroit Sports Broadcasters Association was started because before our time, broadcasters were not allowed in press boxes at all.
Yeah.
So they formed a union as such.
Hey, let me tell you one of the problems that the players had, well, at least when I was playing, 60s and 70s. The broadcasters, you're right, guys never came around. the TV guys never came around. So once you guys come in there with the cameras, yeah, like, it was kind of, oh.
Makeup on, you got a tie, get the hell out of here.
And the other thing was there were always two or three of you, at least two or three
of
you. Yeah,
because you have a cameraman and a sound man. And
sound guy, and it got in the way of everybody. The guy next to you was peeved. The guy on the other side was peeved. You were peeved because all of a sudden, here they are standing there naked with their fun faucets hanging out. And lo and behold.
With the what?
Fun faucets. And lo and behold, everybody's trying to get dressed, and the guy, they're standing there with a microphone, and then every once in a while, you got a guy standing there and looking at it, and you're wondering, what the hell is he looking at, you know? So all kinds of problems create.
And the other thing, just quickly about press boxes, was used to be a sign in every press box, no cheering. In fact, that was the name of Jerome Holton's book, no cheering in the press box. So in other words, something would happen in the game, and if you went, whoa, like that, they would look at you.
Really?
Because you weren't allowed to show any emotion at all. This is strictly covering the game, and we are impartial, and there'll be no show of favoritism or even an emotional reaction.
Well, we hope that's the way it is still to this day. I mean, you're a professional or not. You're a fan, buy a ticket and get to sit in the stands. But anyway, so this guy also, I'm just about done now with the
mailbag. I hope so.
I hope so, because I got to be
2 hours. I mean, we got to get out of here.
And I got to be somewhere Saturday.
A 3-hour show.
And I got to fly to Minneapolis tomorrow. This time tomorrow.
Bob,
so anyway, this guy also continues.
Bob.
Danny, I know. What do you got to do?
I got to be somewhere Saturday.
He said that.
Saturday. Good. Okay. I see also on my Twitter that you were in Lansing signing autographs all day long on Wednesday.
No,
don't
I wasn't.
Forget, folks.
I was working over
there. I know you weren't. You tweeted that you were in Lansing all day Wednesday signing autographs.
I was in Lansing all day Wednesday. I was.
And what's the point?
The point is he's tweeting appearances that he's not at. You don't know what he's doing.
No, I was there.
I don't think he's even tweeting this himself. His helper is.
He's not even here. It's an illusion. Tweet. All right, is that it? Can we please say goodbye?
All right, so anyway, he goes on talking about guys who are, you know, bad guys and good guys. He says he loves my old TV show. He loves your old show. Loves my old show with Ron Cameron. And you can get these Sports Feud Today shows. They're posting them. I don't know who's doing it. I'd love to find out. Posting them everywhere.
You're posting them.
But he said, in one of those TV shows, Bob, you mentioned Walt Terrell as being one of the greatest guys you ever met in sports. Why? So anyway, I go into the Tigers locker room one time after a game to interview Walt. And he's sitting there, and I've got a camera crew. We start to roll the – he says, wait a minute. He was one of the guys who smoked, and you saw him back then. He said, wait a minute, I'm going to put my cigarette out. He says, I do not want any kid out there watching this interview to think that I condone cigarette smoke. I don't want them to be like me. He was – Walt Terrell, one of the nicest, friendliest guys and a really good example for kids.
And he was very but to an earlier question – he was boring and not a very good interviewer. Not his fault.
I don't
just the
know
way
about
it is.
That. I thought Walt was okay.
Right, last
finally,
question
of the mailbag.
Finally,
hey, Danny, here's one for you. An unnamed texter sent this in. Nationals in the World Series. I did not hear anybody pick Washington to be in that World Series, except Denny McClain.
Right.
Well done.
Okay.
Well done.
And I still believe, it's tough for me to say this, but I still believe the Yankees are going to do something miraculous to get there. I don't know.
Now, are you onto Bob, though? He subtly digs at you all show long. And then at the end, he throws you a nice little bouquet and you're back.
A little ball and I'm back. Hi, Bobby. I love you, Bobby.
Now you're all excited again.
Danny
brilliant, Bob.
Knows.
Brilliant.
Danny McClain knows that I love him.
And
let's
love
leave it
too.
At that. No matter what goes on in the show, he knows that I love him. Two more things. Biggest thing, fellas, a moment of seriousness after the levity. I thought the biggest thing that I took out of the FL's game in Green Bay was to see Matthew Stafford's wife, Kelly, sitting at that game in the stands after overcoming the surgery, I mean, that she's done. It just was great to see that she's made a recovery. She's going to make it. And she was at that game, you know, looking like herself again. I thought that was terrific.
It was nice.
And best wishes to former Red Wings president and general manager Jimmy DeVellano. Brain surgery
Ooh.
This week. They removed a benign tumor. The Wings say he's going to make a full recovery. All the problems I had with Jimmy the years that I used to work in Detroit, he's a very nice man and a great hockey man. And we wish Jimmy well.
Very interesting, man. He spoke. Jimmy DeVellano spoke very
Jimmy
carefully.
DeVellano.
Now, follow me, Bob. Say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.
Hey, so long. See you next time.
See you next time. Happy trails.
Oh, and oh, and by the way, next time,
no,
folks,
it's over. Fade it out. Mike Lucci faded out. Brandon, fade to black.
Happy trails to you.